I'm Gina Kaufman, and now we're switching gears. I'm joined in the studio by author Whitney Terrell, whose novel about the history of Kansas City's East Side and white flight to Johnson County is 10 years old. Whitney, good morning.
How you doing?
Good. 10 years. That's crazy.
Oh, man. Yes. I've had two children in this time.
You're a different man.
I guess. I'm a more tired man.
Your novel, The King of Kings County, is sort of a mashup of historical fact and literary imagination. What are the pieces of true Kansas City history that create a framework for this story?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I discovered while researching that book was how prevalent the use of racial covenants were in creating this sort of truce dividing line in Kansas City.
Explain racial covenants.
Well, those were covenants that are written into the deed of a house so that when you bought the house, this was in the 20s, 30s, 40s, you were signing an agreement that said you would, I mean, the covenants read things like, this property may not be sold or rented to a Negro, Oriental, or a Jew, you know. So they're pretty frank and discriminatory covenants, and those sort of provided a sort of private way of segregating Kansas City rather than segregating it by Jim Crow laws, which was done in the South.
So the owners of property could sort of dictate the future of that property, and by extension, if you own a lot of property, you have a lot of power.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so, you know, the thing that was most difficult for Kansas City was, you know, the use of neighborhood associations to enforce these racial covenants. They had been used by almost every developer. But what the Nichols Company did was figure out how to make them last in perpetuity. When the house was sold, the next person would have to enforce them, and they would last over generationally.
And the Nichols Company in this novel, The King of Kings County, is the Bowen Company.
Well, there's a Bowen Company. You know, I mean, I create alternate histories, my own little private alternate history of Kansas City, but I do certainly think about and reflect on the real Kansas City.
So talk about where the fiction comes in, because there's, as I was rereading, I've been rereading, and it's been a good second experience. There are street names that are unchanged. There are historical figures like Pendergast who are unchanged. And then there are other figures who are, if you know Kansas City history, clearly alluding to someone, but also not mirror images of them.
Yeah, it's been an interesting process for me when writing about Kansas City to try to, I mean, for instance, I was a huge fan of William Faulkner. And, you know, he wrote about his hometown of Oxford, Mississippi, and he called it Jefferson. He just made everything up and changed everything. But he was really writing about Oxford all the time. You can't really do that with a major metropolitan area, just rename it. So what I decided to do was when I was going to fictionalize something, when I was going to make up a character, when I was going to go into someone's head or write from their point of view, I would change the name of the place to signify that that had been done.
What do you think you get from tackling issues like race, real estate, and corruption, and as they related to a very specific city, in novel form rather than through like a nonfiction expose?
Well, I mean, I am a novelist, you know, more
that's
than a nonfiction writer. That's sort of what I do. But I also think that you can tell a story. I mean, the book is about these social issues that we talk about, right, and that we're going to do this panel on tomorrow. But when the reader encounters it, they're encountering a story about human beings and about a kid named Jack Atchison and what his father was like and what his friends were like. And so, to me, readers tend to be more engaged with narrative than the dry presentation of facts. And I think that there's a place for both. There have been tremendous nonfiction books written about racial covenants and their use in Kansas City, but they're not as fun as a novel.
You mentioned a kid named Jack Atchison. He is a kid when we meet him. He becomes a grown-up in the course of the novel. But when we meet him, he's a kid. What makes him tick? What is it that he's observing? And what are his own personal motivations and, I don't know, his character that's driving his response?
Well, that was the hardest thing in the novel for me to figure out. He was going to narrate it, and he has an incredibly flamboyant father named Alton Atchison, who is a totally invented character for me, but sort of the heart of the novel. And I had to figure out, like, what makes this kid interesting other than just watching his flamboyant father? And in a way, Jack is sort of like the book's conscience, right? He wants his father to be more normal. You know, he wants his father to be less flamboyant. He doesn't want his father to be like letting him in on all of his schemes and how he's going to rip these people off and what's, you know, involving him in all these sort of schemes.
Let's talk about who his father is ripping off and why.
Well, I mean, some of the very early scenes of the novel, Alton Atchison, who wants to be great.
He wants to be a great self-made man.
In a particular American way, like Tom Durant, the guy who built the railroad across the United States, but also made a tremendous amount of money through chicanery. Alton's very open about this with his son. Like, this is how you make money, you know? So early on, you see him sort of buying land in Johnson County because he knows the highway is going to be
built there. Or Kings County,
right?
As it's called in the
book.
There
you go. In what is my Kings County and what in reality people would recognize as Johnson County, because he knows the highway's coming through and the people whose homes and properties he's buying up don't know this. And so Jack goes along on these trips and he is confronted with the interesting proposition of, what if you have to be your father's conscience? What if your father has no conscience? And that's an interesting question for a kid.
Especially because, yeah, there's this complicating factor of, there are people more powerful than his father who are also ripping his father off.
Yes. Well, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. If you're going to swim with the sharks, which Alton does, you very rarely win. And he doesn't really in the end.
It is possible that you get this all the time, and I recognize it as a ridiculous question, but I can't help it. Is there a little bit of Jack Atchison in you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he goes to a private school, which is very much patterned on what was called Pembroke Country Day School when I went to it. I mean, he's going there in like the 50s, but what I realized was that going to that school in the 50s was no different than going to it in the 70s and 80s, which is when I went there. Nothing really had changed. And, you know, all of those things about Jack, he's very slow. He gets last place in field day. He's a member of the last heat and doesn't know where he quite fits in that world were things that I remembered from being a kid in that school.
In The King of Kings County, we get this story of segregation and white flight really from the vantage point of the very people who, in the world of the novel anyway, deliberately mastermind it. Why tell the story from that point of view?
That was the one that I knew best, you know. I mean, I have written, The Huntsman, for instance, has an African American character who I told the story from. But I thought, in this particular case, I wanted to tell the story from my class, you know, my background, because whites are affected by racism and segregation. They lose their souls by participating in it, and it changes the city in ways that and changes them in ways that they don't often take into account. And I wanted to show that part of the equation.
For the 10-year anniversary of this book, you've planned a library discussion, which I'll be moderating, about segregation in Kansas City and whether anything has changed, like gotten better or worse in the last 10 years since the book came out. What made you want to approach this literary anniversary by asking that question?
Well, first of all, I have to credit Henry Fortunato, who used to work at the Kansas City Public Library and who originally suggested this, and then his successor, Kerry Coogan. They've sort of were instrumental in making this program happen. And they've invited Gwen Grant and Emil Cleaver to be on the panel with us, and we're going to be able to have this sort of discussion. What was interesting to me was that there's a scene, one of the effects of what Alton Atchison does by encouraging white flight into Kings County is to empty out downtown. And there's a scene in the novel where Alton Atchison is hitting golf balls down Grand Avenue because this is the result of what he's done, right? There's no one around. And yet in the last 10 years, we've had this incredible renaissance downtown. And I think it's worth talking about how that's changed. The other thing, how that's changed in integration in the city. And I also think the other thing that's changed is Ferguson and the protests in Ferguson and other cities like Baltimore, how did that relate to Kansas City? You know, St. Louis is right down the road. It's essentially our sister city. What's the state of the, what's the racial climate in Kansas City these days? I think that's worth talking about. And I'm hoping for some, I have questions more than I have answers, you know.
In the last 10 years, you've been the guy who wrote this book and who's expressed skepticism at the very least about beloved pieces of Kansas City history. What's that been like? And have you learned anything in the process of being that guy that you wish you could work into your novel?
No, not really. I'm fine with being that guy. I didn't know I was that guy. But if I am, I've been happy enough at it. I mean, I've been working on a new book. Mostly, I haven't been thinking about Kansas City for the last 5 or 6 years. I've been writing about Iraq.
Interesting. So this will be a revisiting of this subject matter for you, too.
It'll be fun to come back to.
Whitney Terrell, congratulations on this milestone.
Thank you very much.
Whitney's novel, The King of Kings County, was published 10 years ago. He'll be a part of a panel at the library tomorrow evening all about segregation in Kansas City and whether anything's changed in the last decade. I'll be the moderator, and I'll hope to see you there. You can listen back to any of today's discussions online. We'll have those available at kcur.org/centralstandard by the end of the day. Subscribe to our podcast while you're there. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, the history of the garment industry here in Kansas City. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date with Steve Kraske next.